It is now my pleasure to reintroduce ALA's parliamentarian, Ellie Mina. Ellie will be available at resolution table number 12 in the ALA offices in the Anaheim Convention Center, Hall C, to help with any questions you may have regarding parliamentary procedures. The resolutions table hours are listed in ALA Council Document number 3.1. Also on the platform today are Maureen Sullivan, ALA President-elect. Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. And Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary of the Council. I would also like to reintroduce Danielle Alderson and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for the annual conference is Kathy Cortopassi. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. Also, we have reserved a table for members of the press. It is to my left near the captionist table. Electrical outlets are available for those of you who wish to plug in your laptops at the tables in this room. For those councilors who would like to have their photograph taken for the council webpage photo gallery, please see Lois Ann over at the projectionist table. We have special guests with us today. If they are in the room, would they please stand as I call their names? Please hold your applause until all have been recognized. I know you may not do that, but I will ask anyway. The American Library Association is delighted to introduce 2012-2013 ALA President-elect and Councillor Barbara K. Stripling. Min Chow, President, Chinese American Librarians Association. Janice Kowemi, President-elect, American Indian Library Association. Sarah Ann Long, ALA past president. Robert Dysart, Deputy Librarian of Congress. Donna Sheeter, Deputy Chief Information Officer, Congressional Research Service, Library of Congress. Elizabeth Bagley, President, Georgia Library Association. Wanda Brown, President, North Carolina Library Association. Terry Buckner, President, Kentucky Library Association. Michelle Burke, President-elect, Oregon Library Association. Robbie DeBuff, President, Nevada Library Association. Connie Gilman, President, Virginia Library Association. Stacy Glazer, President-elect, Alaska Library Association. Sue K. Hull, President, Wyoming Library Association. Lucy Holman, President, Maryland Library Association. Terry Jones, President, Delaware Library Association. Adrian Juarez, President, Utah Library Association. Karen Klapperstuck, President-elect, New Jersey Library Association. Dennis J. LaLoupe, ALA Counselor and President, Indiana Library Association. Charlene Pichlou, President-elect, Louisiana Library Association. Rhonda Putney Gold, ALA Counselor and immediate past President, Wisconsin Library Association. Lisa Rice, President-elect, Kentucky Library Association. Jim Robb, President, Arkansas Library Association. Brian Suneda, President, Washington Library Association. Barbara Stites, President, Florida Library Association. Emily Tisch, President, Alabama Library Association. Jennifer Wiseman, President-elect, Washington Library Association. And Kathy Wolford, President-elect, Michigan Library Association. We also have with us today Dr. Shou Sen Zhang, President, Library Association of Taiwan, and Director General of the National Central Library of Taiwan. Are there any other international Library Association officers that are here? I know there are some attending the conference, and I don't know if any of them are here. Okay, thank you very much. The quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. I have been advised, and I can see as well, that we have well over 75 councilors present, therefore we have a quorum. Thank you. The rules for this meeting are in Council Document Number 5. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolved clauses should be read. The Resolutions Committee is responsible for reviewing all resolutions at least 24 hours before those resolutions are added to the Council agenda. Please be reminded that all resolutions with fiscal implications must go to the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, or BARC, before being added to the agenda. Debate shall be limited to 3 minutes for each speaker. No speaker may have the floor twice on the same question until all who wish to speak have spoken. We have timing lights that will indicate how much time you have left. When the light is green, you have up to 3 minutes. When the light turns yellow, you have 1 minute remaining. When the red light comes on, your time is up. Keep in mind, this is not intended to stifle debate, but to ensure fairness. Is there any objection to the proposed rules? Seeing no objection, the chair declares the rules adopted by consent. As a courtesy to others, please turn off your cell phones or turn them to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. The Resolutions Committee asks that all resolutions be submitted in hard copy and emailed to Councilor Larry Romans, Chair of the Resolutions Committee, at ALAResolutions@ala.org. This will aid the projectionist in preparing your motion for the overhead screens. The Resolutions Committee is stationed in the ALA office area, table number 12, in the Anaheim Convention Center, Hall C, during the times listed in ALA Council Document 3.1. Would Councilor Larry Romans, everyone knows him, but would he please stand so we can see you, Larry? There you are. Also, please be reminded that all committee reports and documents must be emailed to Lois Ann Gregory Wood, ALA Council Secretariat. The address is lgregory@ala.org, no later than 6 p.m. on the day preceding the council meeting at which they are to be discussed. Also, please provide Lois Ann with a contact phone number in case there is a question about your document. As you know, Council 3 on Tuesday, June 26th, is just 90 minutes long. This is to enable councilors to attend the closing general session and the inaugural event, which will begin at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday. For this reason, we hope to accomplish the bulk of our business at Council 1 and Council 2. There will be reserved seating for councilors at the closing session, which takes place in the Anaheim Convention Center in Ballroom A through C. If you plan to attend and have not already done so, please let Lois Ann know so we can be sure to have enough seats for everyone, but the right number of seats. Councilors will also be acknowledged at the beginning of the program. In accordance with ALA Policy 7.4.10, all resolutions approved by the membership will be presented at the next meeting of council by the chair of the Resolutions Committee. The Resolutions Committee chair will indicate which membership resolutions are clearly policy matters. The presiding officer of council will call for council's guidance on the disposition of each membership item in turn. The following resolutions were approved at yesterday's ALA membership meeting, where we did have a quorum. First is a resolution on voter suppression in America, ALA Council Document Number 40. And the second is school libraries and librarians are critical to education success, ALA Council Document Number 41. The agenda, ALA Council Document 8.5, revised 6/23 at 11 p.m., is available at the pickup station in this room. On the agenda, you will find allocations of time to certain issues. These time limits are only estimates to guide me as I run the meeting. Under the 24-hour rule, we have also received the following resolutions to add under new business. Resolution in support of whistleblower Bradley Manning, Council Document Number 42. And resolution on access to information and WikiLeaks, ALA Council Document Number 43. Do you have any other new business to add at this time? Are there any objections to the agenda as amended? Hearing none, the chair declares the agenda adopted as amended. You were emailed the minutes of the 2012 ALA Midwinter Meeting, ALA Council Document Number 2.1. Copies are also available at the Council Document Pickup Station in this room. Are there any corrections to be noted? Thank you. If there are no corrections, the chair declares the ALA Council minutes from the 2012 ALA Midwinter Meeting adopted. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the nominations for the ALA 2012-2013 Council Committee on Committees. I now call upon Maureen Sullivan, chair of the 2011-2012 ALA Council Committee on Committees, to present the committee's report. Maureen?
Good morning. On behalf of the 2011-2012 ALA Committee on Committees, whose members are Aaron Dobbs, Peter Hepburn, Sarah Kelly Johns, and Patrick Sweeney, and myself, I am pleased to submit the nominations for election to the 2012-2013 Committee on Committees to be chaired by 2012-2013 President-elect Barbara Stripling. I refer you to Council Document Number 12 and submit the following slate of 8 candidates, from which 4 are to be elected to serve on the 2012-2013 Council Committee on Committees. The 4 candidates receiving the highest number of votes will be elected to serve a 1-year term beginning at the adjournment of this conference. Will the candidates please stand when I call your name, and I would ask that you hold applause of all candidates until I have read the list. Matthew Sizek, Ann Crutzen, John DeSantis, Saul Gomez, Terry Kirk, M. Claire Knowles, Lauren Presley, and Rocco Stano.
Thank you, Maureen. The chair would like to call your attention to Bylaw Article 3, Section 6, parentheses C, which provides for nominations from the floor. To be eligible, councilors must have terms which extend at least through 2013. Seconds are not required for floor nominations. Are there any nominations from the floor for the 2012-2013 Committee on Committees? I see no one at the microphones. The chair declares the nominations closed. Ballots will be ready for you to pick up beginning at 5:30 p.m. this afternoon in this room. The ballot box will remain open in this room today until 7:30 p.m. You must call for your ballot in person. For your convenience, the ballot box will be brought to the council chamber at 8:30 a.m. on Monday, June 25th, and it will remain in council chambers until 1:30 p.m. The tellers will close the ballot box at 1:30 p.m. on Monday, June 25th, in order to tally the votes. They will present the report to you on Tuesday during our final meeting. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 12.1 and again call on President-elect Maureen Sullivan.
Thank you, Molly. The 2011-2012 Council Committee on Committees submits the following councillor at large and chapter candidates for election to the 2012-2013 Planning and Budget Assembly. Please note that the first two chapter councillors receiving the highest number of votes will be elected to two-year terms, 2012 to 2014, on the ALA Planning and Budget Assembly. The chapter councillor candidates are Shelby Harkin, Alan Kornblau, Nancy Ray, and Andrew Wertheimer. Three councillors at large will be elected for a two-year term, again 2012 to 2014, on the Planning and Budget Assembly. The councillor at large candidates are Ed Garcia, Julius Jefferson, Diane Chen Kelly, Andrew Pace, Gail Schlachter, Courtney Young.
Nominations may be made from the floor. To be eligible, councillors must have terms which extend at least through 2014. Seconds are not required. Are there any floor nominations for the Planning and Budget Assembly? Seeing no one at the microphone, the chair declares the nominations closed. Thank you, Maureen, and your committee for a job well done. As noted in ALA Council Document 12.2, the following councillors have volunteered to serve as tellers for the election: Angelica Fortin, Kathy Parsons, Cher Ravani, took a little bit of time to read the name, but I hope I got it correct, and Patricia Hoffman, who will be chair. Thank you all for volunteering. The chair now refers you to ALA Council Document 15.1 and calls upon ALA Executive Director Keith Michael Fields to review the Executive Board actions taken since the 2012 midwinter meeting in Dallas, Texas.
Thank you. If I may take a note of personal privilege before I launch into this, how many of you were at the scholarship bash last night? For those of you who weren't there, to see Stephen King and Roger McGuinn on stage playing, Birds songs, I would really recommend that you go onto YouTube and catch that. That was, I would say, a memorable event. Here's for the Spectrum Scholarship Program and ProQuest. Yeah. Okay, as far as Executive Board actions since the midwinter meeting, you have Council Document Number 15.1, which outlines all of the actions, many of which have to do with budgetary matters, selection of conference sites. But I will highlight a couple of things that I just want to particularly bring to your attention. One is that the Committee on Accreditation, it will be working with the Committee on Professional Ethics to review the current COA conflict of interest policies and will recommend modifications if and as appropriate by the 2013 member meeting. I know this is something that councillors have had some information on, and they are working on it. We have in fact moved ahead with financing for the Neil Schumann purchase, and that financing is actually going into place this week. And then we did approve, the board did approve a special promotion for first-year personnel members. One of the things we have been trying to do is we have an enormous number of people who join ALA, either to go to the midwinter annual conference or to attend an ASL, ACRL, PLA conference or other event. These are join and saves, and there are many thousands of them each year. And traditionally, keeping them as members has been one of the challenges, so that you have an enormous number of people that are members for 1 year that join for a conference, and then who we lose. We are really focusing on that as a tremendous opportunity to see if we can improve the retention rate on those people who do join so that we can engage them, and this provides for a financial incentive as well to help support that, to try and increase the number of people who review. And then, renew rather. And then last, that the board did ask us to begin to aggressively work on this whole issue of publishers that are not making digital content available. And in fact, I don't know, it was just last week that an editorial by President Molly Raphael appeared in the Huffington Post, which called publishers to task for this. We will continue active media outreach to put positive pressure on publishers to do the right thing. Are there any questions?
I'm sorry, microphone six.
Christine Haig, PLA Division Counselor. Keith, have they a membership? Well, we talked about this at the PLA board meeting, and there was some interest in having automatic renewals of ALA membership, and quite a few of our board members were in support of that, so that that might ease the process not only of first-time members but of long-time members.
And we will be looking into that. Thank you.
Microphone four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I noticed that the Executive Board has affirmed the end of the small division subsidy for ASPA and ALTA, and I would ask that clarification of that be given.
Right. The ASCLA and ALTA were receiving small division support, as was YALSA. For a period of time. We're very pleased that YALSA has become a vibrant division and no longer requires the subsidy. Our goal under this plan is that ASCLA and ALTA also become vibrant divisions so that the subsidy is no longer required. So let me say that that resolution is attended by business plans which have been developed. ALA is supporting them, and we believe it is an achievable goal that they can be financially robust enough that the small division subsidy will not be required. So it's not just a fiat, it's a partnership to get them on their feet so that they have more resources.
Microphone four.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. I'm wondering why the decision for the midwinter meeting was changed from Los Angeles to Denver. Of course, an advantage of meeting in Los Angeles is that there's usually no funny white stuff on the ground.
I can't actually answer that. What we can do is, if you would like, we'll get some information and we could bring it back at Council 2. Would that be?
Yes, thank
great.
You.
Great, thank you.
If there are no further questions, we will move to ALA Council Document 9.1, which is the implementation report of Council's 2012 Midwinter Meeting Actions. The Chair will again call upon Keith to respond to any questions about this report.
Great. A number of resolutions were passed related to policy positions. The Washington Office and Office of Intellectual Freedom, as always, are working to advocate and to implement those. Probably the two that are, I would just note, are the change that was approved in the payout for the endowment. And this has increased the amount of support that is now being provided to the divisions and to the general fund offices and units from the endowment as part of a a new strategy. So this is certainly a plus and has is being implemented this year. And then the second is the restructuring of the membership meeting and the council and membership and board information session, which was implemented yesterday.
Seeing no one else at the microphones, we will proceed. Thank you, Keith. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 30.1 and call upon Sari Feldman and Robert Wolven, co-chairs of the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group, to present their report. Oh, okay, sorry. So we're gonna, we'll switch the agenda then. 10:30? Okay. Okay. Thank you. I'll move it so we can go back to it. The next item on today's agenda is the council self-assessment discussion. Before we start the discussion, I would like to provide you and our observers with some background information. At the 2011 annual conference, the Presidential Task Force on Improving the Effectiveness of ALA's Council recommended that council participate in a self-assessment. This assessment would determine how well council believes it performs its roles and whether council believes its actions effectively serve its mission. The task force also recommended that this effort be led by a third-party consultant. Following a discussion at its spring meeting, the executive board commissioned ALA parliamentarian Ellie Mina as that consultant to assist in developing an online survey to assess council's own perception of its performance. Ellie Mina was chosen because of his unique understanding of ALA and its governance, his authoring of works on effective governance, and his service as a consultant to a number of other nonprofit and governmental boards. He was assisted in developing this survey by ALA Executive Director Keith Michael Fields and others. The survey was sent out to Council with a return response request for early June, which we will now discuss. And I'd like to call upon Maureen Sullivan, ALA President-elect, to lead that discussion.
Who is obviously over-eager to get started with this. So I'm going to start by just giving you an overview of how we're going to work, and it is an hour that we have for this work. And as I'm doing this, Lois Ann will be distributing a worksheet that we prepared to support the work that we'll ask you to do in this discussion. I'm going to start by inviting you to form into small groups and to work very hard to make sure your groups are not larger than 8. The ideal range is 6 to 8. And then give you about 15 minutes within your small group to address 2 questions. The first is, what is it that you think has emerged from this survey that we should focus on first? And I would suggest in a 15-minute time frame, not spend more than about 7 minutes on that question. And then the second one, what specific actions, ideas do you have that could improve the effectiveness of this body? And I want everyone to be aware that at the executive board level, we're very mindful that this is the beginning of a discussion, but we wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to have some face-to-face conversation here this morning. The reason that about 3/4 of this hour will be devoted to the reporting out is we want to give each group an opportunity to report out highlights. And I'll remind you of this when we come to those reports, but what is meant by a highlight is not taking more than about a minute or a minute and a half to tell us from the recorder, the reporter's perspective, what those highlights would be. So there is a role in this small group of the recorder, and as Lois Ann is distributing these forms, there are likely to be extra forms, and we'll make sure that there are, so that one of them can be used to report out the group's work. We thought it would be helpful for each of you to have one, but then to have one for the small group. We're also mindful that some of you in the recorder role may want to take notes on a tablet or other device, and we welcome submission of your thoughts and ideas electronically. So what I would do next is invite you to start forming the small groups. Once your group is formed, if you would just sit and wait, I'll suggest that we all start the discussion at the same time so that I'm able to manage the time frame for you. So go forth and form new groups to discuss, 6 to 8 in number. And feel free to just turn around, make it easy for yourselves. As we're coming back to the quiet, reflective time to hear the reports, let me take advantage of this as an opportunity to say we do want each group to report out back into the process.
No.
We also have the transcription, and this is why we're asking you to report at the mic. And then one other important reminder, this is the beginning of our conversation about how to use these results as we go forward. We will be setting up a group on ALA Connect that will enable us to continue this discussion. And Joanne is going to help me by prompting me with the mic, and the first mic to recognize is number 4.
Thank you, Maggie Farrell, ACRL counselor, and I'll try to be brief. Looking at areas that we should focus on first, a question is how do we draw a balance between managing internal operations and of the association as well as the external environment responding to critical issues? In areas that looking for more specific actions, more digital, virtual conversations, how do we effectively use our time between conferences? And then a last point we want to make is maybe as council we need to re-examine the resolution process. Are resolutions effective externally? Are petitions such as the White House petitions, calls and letters more effective? And should we have multiple tools that vary according to the issue and policymakers so that we're making a significant impact externally?
Thank you for going first and modeling so well. Highlights in less than a minute and a half. Microphone 2.
Rob Banks, Kansas Chapter Counselor. We felt that we looked at the part where counselors are not as well informed as they perhaps need to be with the issues. There's not enough time to process some of those, some of that information. Finding some of the information can be time consuming. It's there, but it's not well organized. To that end, we feel like we should do an audit of our communication process to see if there's ways to make that better, to consider different learning styles and processing styles. And an example is the documents that are put on Connect are not necessarily organized the way we use them in sessions. If they could be organized in the agenda order, Council 1, Council 2, so forth, that would certainly make it easier to access those.
Wonderful. Microphone 6, and then I'm going to be calling on microphone 5. Microphone 6.
Matt Sizek, ALA Council at Large. Our group, two things that we'd like to focus on, where we should focus first, was that there was no option for virtual meetings, so it's hard to do the work of the council only twice a year, especially with the fact that sometimes council takes a long time to move on issues, and sometimes the issue has passed long before council is able to get around to it in meetings. So the specific actions we had was to consider virtual meetings or virtual voting to allow council to be more agile and to consider issues and the response as they happen. And possibly having an ALA organizational orientation for new councilors. Something that's a little bit more in-depth than what is done at the current orientation, because it was felt in our group that maybe councilors are lacking some understanding of the finer points of how we fit into the greater scheme of the association, rather than just the mechanics of how council works.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Thank you. Pat Hoffman, councilor from Maryland. We worked basically on orientation. We'd like to improve orientation, make it mandatory for new counselors. We would like to see it restructured and enhanced based on the questions in the self-assessment, perhaps add a beginner and an intermediate orientation, and would like to have the committee structure included in that information. Would like communications geared towards new counselors, and also to, as part of the orientation, to provide a mentor for new counselors for a year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, microphone 5.
Mario Gonzalez, counselor at large. We said that we needed to have less reporting out of documents that we have received and to concentrate on hot topics, take a survey of council before council meeting and have perhaps three hot topics that we should discuss. One of the ones that came up was legislative issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Pam Hickson-Stevenson, Ohio Chapter Counselor. We also focused on the topic of better orientation and training for new counselors, feeling that there needs to be more of that, and some of the specific actions that we are suggesting are developing a formal mentoring program, better explanation of counsel's role, mandatory assignment of new counselors to committees, as that is, we felt, one of the better ways to begin learning how ALA functions, and a phased orientation using online tools in advance of the Saturday orientations that are offered at annual and midwinter.
Great. Microphone 3, and then I've got several at microphone 4 to follow.
Ben Trapskin, Minnesota Chapter Counselor. I guess I just echo what some of the other counselors said, but we also thought that making council smaller, you know, instead of the numbers here, maybe dropping that maybe even in half to allow for more conversation on the decision. We felt that sometimes people tend to repeat sentiments instead of moving the conversation forward.
Great. Thank you. Microphone 4.
Rhonda Putney-Gould, ALS Division Counselor. Our group thought that there is a sense of disengagement since a third of us did not fill out the survey. We thought there needed to be more information on committee participation and how to participate on a committee. We discussed council terms in terms of the length of how long we all serve. By the time we finally get to know what we're doing, we're off council if we haven't gotten reelected, that kind of thing. We also thought that it would be nice if council had its own very informative website that actually told us what we need to do, who do we need to report to, in terms of, you know, just being more engaged in the organization and what we need to do to perform our jobs better. And then also we discussed a mentoring system, like many of you also did, and we just thought that there should be a lot more participation besides Lois Ann on ALA Connect.
Wonderful, thank you. Microphone 4.
I'm a little taller than anyone here. Carla Land, Counselor at Large. Some of the stuff that we talked about has already been said, so I will not repeat everything, but we were focusing a little bit more on the nomination process. Some counselors have been here for a long, long time, and it's very easy to renominate yourself. So one of the things we thought was, you know, maybe make it a little bit more difficult to get yourself renominated for the ballot, reelected. Maybe the nomination committee could pick people who are currently on council, so we have more of a mix of people that could accurately represent all of our constituents. Other things we had discussed is Congress is held accountable. They've got C-SPAN. Why don't we have something like that so that our members who are not here can see what it is that we actually do instead of us going back and reporting to them? That's especially true for at-large counselors because we don't have a meeting to go to where we can report. We can just show up at the lunchroom and say, hey, I'm a counselor. Does anybody want to know what we've been doing? So those are the things that we really focused on. Other things, too, would be it's harder to get here. A lot of budget cuts and everything. I know my library organization doesn't have the money to send me, so I'm here on my own dime. So if we could have done this over Skype, that would have been pretty cool and saved me a little bit of money, and I could still be involved. So those are the things that we were discussing.
Great. Thank you. Microphone 4.
Christine Hague, PLA counselor. We have four things to investigate the use of consent agendas for issues not asking for action, including reports from standing committees, rules of the meeting, council meeting procedures, reports from the executive board action from previous conferences. We'd like to offer an opt-out for print copies of council documents and encourage people to work with electronic documents. To keep council time more effective, we'd like to maintain the free flow and information atmosphere at council forums. And we were happy with the election and re-election process with the 3-year terms for councilors and opposed term limits or the initiation of term limits, and that requiring, we like the idea that seated councilors have to get petitions, which is a very easy process.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Debbie Short, Utah Chapter Counselor. Most of what we discussed has already been said, but we would like to also add down that chapter counselors and divisions and everybody else needs absolute definitions of their responsibilities, and we also need to know everybody else's responsibilities so the forms of communications can go back and forth easily. And the other thing is that we should probably follow some of our own models. For example, the model of the task force for the school librarians, what's going on right now that involves everyone, we might incorporate that in some other areas.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Peter Hepburn, GLBTRT counselor. We too focused on training and orientation, but we also felt that there's a real need for counselors to take responsibility for familiarizing themselves with such things as the policy manual. read that thing through. The other thing is there's a perception that council sometimes gets caught up in low-level or niche issues, and we think we should be focusing on big issues, but in fact a lot of the big issues are farmed out to committees and other bodies that we've created, and council is an effective place for these niche issues to come through so that they do get a voice somewhere. So we've got to change the perception that we're only dealing with niche issues and make sure people know, no, we've got the big stuff covered as well.
Okay. Thank you. Microphone three.
Karen Downing, Counselor at Large. Our group really concentrated on two areas, communication between meetings and orientation of new and continuing counselors. In terms of communication between conferences, we talked about a variety of different virtual ways to do that, including having some sort of regular chat sessions where we can raise some of these issues that we want to get ahead of rather than be reacting to. We also thought that this would help with the agility of this body, preparation for when we do come together face to face, and just communication in general. In terms of orientation and continuing education for counselors, we talked about maybe mirroring the kinds of YouTube videos that BARC did for counselors to address many different kinds of issues that we just can't pack into one orientation session. We also talked about the idea of using some sort of software like Live Guides, where we could have tabs for different things like budget, resolutions, Robert's Rules, and things like that.
Thank you. Microphone five.
I'm Irene Briggs, Counselor at Large. Much of what our group talked about has already been mentioned, but I want to emphasize that there was a need to have a revamping of orientation to include more in-depth information for incoming counselors. We also talked about a need for formal mentoring so that members would get a good understanding of how the council process works. And we also mentioned the fact that some counselors have been on council for a while and they still don't know many of the people who are serving here. And if there was some way we could find a way to spend some time either before our sessions, maybe 10 minutes, just devoting to learning who each other is right here in this group.
Wonderful. Thank you. Microphone six.
Andrew Wertheimer, chapter counselor for Hawaii. Most of the suggestions that you've heard have already been, or that our group discussed have already been raised, but I just wanted to share two of our main concerns. That was trying to save time at council meetings. And we had two main suggestions. One was, again, when we hear reports, that especially a few groups which still read word for word, that the president should feel empowered to go and say, could you give us an executive summary? And the other point is for some of the council members who go and always are routinely repeat themselves and say, hi, I'm here, it seems to be, that we should find a way either of the president saying, if you are not adding to the discussion, you know, thank you, we've heard your point. Again, we want to create an open discussion where important issues can be raised, but, you know, there's a lot of time that's wasted by the Me Toos. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Microphone two, it's your turn.
Xu Dongjin, Council at Large. This group discussed several questions, focused on question six, emotion, question 35, committee structure, and question 41, function of LA Council, Executive Board, Executive Director. etc. We focused on several things. One thing is we focused on those disagree and neutral. For question 35, we got 8 strong disagree, 42 disagree, and 30 neutral. And agree only 32, and strong agree only 4. And question 41, that is function of ALA Council, etc., we got agree only 8, agree 8 agrees, and 42 8 disagree and 42, 8 strong disagree, 42 disagree, etc. We think these areas should be improved and focused on. For question 2, we discussed the one thing is maybe a task force could be established to focus on those areas to be improved and give a recommendation maybe at midwinter or next ALA. And also maybe we should put some flowchart, organization structure clearly to show our members. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 2.
Patrick Sweeney, Councillor at Large. And I'm going to reiterate a couple of things that other people said, I guess. So sorry about that for the people who said that was the problem with Council. Question number 41, there was 43% was in the negative. So we wanted to suggest that we develop some kind of continuing training to help councillors explain and understand the relationships among the various components of ALA and how ALA directly influences those kinds of components and training centered around that.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. We had a lot of really good conversation around two themes. One, as it related to improving communication within council and within the membership, and then also engaging more of the membership and council in the resolution process. So we have 5 suggestions, one of which was including an inclusive process to reach out to roundtables and divisions, et cetera, to assist in developing resolutions, making sure that the resolution process appears in an updated toolkit or something on ALA Connect for educational purposes, that perhaps a ribbon could be developed to encourage dialogue with the membership that could be worn by council members. So something like, ask me a question, I'm on council. We should also consider targeting counselors from discussions that happen at midwinter, and so that dialogue can continue at the annual conference. And then also consider developing different types of resolutions. So, for example, we have memorial resolutions, so perhaps we can have so-called professional resolutions, social resolutions, etc., so that we can kind of, you know, determine really what the business of council is.
Wonderful. Microphone 3.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large. Our group consisted of Brian Schottlander, Jim Neal, Susan Gibbons, and myself. We focused primarily on Q35 and Q41, which have been mentioned already. We suggested that the school libraries and digital content working groups be used as an example, that we should be creating more of these groups rather than assigning tasks to or expanding the standing committee structure. We also suggested that the Committee on Committees be charged to do a committee audit so that we can sort of get to that, the committee structure being confusing to folks, and then to also educate not only council but the membership on that committee structure so that there's less confusion. We also thought that could then address Q29, the criticism of creativity and innovation, that if we did those more nimble, agile methods, that people could see that we were doing that. In terms of the Q41, which was the distinction between council, the executive committee, and the staff, we thought that orientation is doing a better job in orienting new council members on their duties, but not drawing the distinctions between the functions of those other groups. So we thought that the orientation could address some of those issues to make it clear the roles of each of those groups.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Yes, our group focused also on the two questions that have been highlighted recently, question 35 regarding committees and the distinction between council committees and ALA committees, and also around the distinction between the functions that have been discussed between council executive director and executive board. Our recommendations are several. Again, following on the trend, we're focusing on orientation for council and how these distinctions, for example, the committee structures or the functions, can be highlighted more readily in orientation to the newbies, but also to, shall we say, reorientation for those of us who've been on council for a while. Another recommendation we have is that we undertake a complete review of the committee structure, not just of committees on council, but committees for the association, and we're suggesting within a time frame of 2 years, in order to make this more specific, a SMART goal, if you will. And we think this will be very important, focusing because also of the trends and the virtual capacities that we're exploring now also should be relating to our committee structure, which is, shall we say, in the analog of environment. But focusing on the second topic, the distinction between functions of council, we believe all of those functions should be more publicized and made known among not just council, but actually our members.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Of course, similar themes. It was remarked that we had a new...
Would you introduce...
Kathleen Kern Reeser, counselor. The orientation before of Dallas was really good. It was felt that there should have been, in addition to those procedural things, which there are places to go, like the policy manual, to cover more cultural elements, how to be a good counselor. I don't think most of us have probably not been part of an assembly this large. While we've done lots of committee work, this is a new environment, and how to be effective in that environment. And then also to have a post-conference debriefing for newer counselors with a few more old-time counselors, long-term counselors, to have a Q&A informally online about what happened, why did this happen, why did this not happen, who was that person, and maybe create a little bit more of a cohort and an environment of sharing and question answering.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Judith Gibbons at large. We are also going to echo some of the comments people made previously. We feel there should be a strong focus on the library issues, that we sometimes see a disconnect and think that more is done in committee and task force work than in council. We strongly urge that council consider term limits, possibly two consecutive terms. Council should be made smaller, possibly 50 chapter councilors and 50 at-large councilors. And we also want to reiterate the comments that were made about the strength of the staff and the executive board of working with council. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Nick Buron, Yalsa councilor. In regards to question 41, we found it very refreshing that it actually laid it out so simply that ALA council is policy making, the executive board's implementation, and the executive director and staff are daily operations. This was a very refreshing clarity in one sentence. And for improved effectiveness, we would like, we thought it would be a good idea to say it at the beginning of council session to remind us and to remind everybody what our responsibilities are. We also looked at 35 as well, in the structure, the committee structure. We also felt that it was something that was a bit of a mystery. While we said we want the old paperback handbook back, what we lamented for was the ability to look in one place to find all the committees in one place, the email addresses of everybody. It doesn't have to be in print, of course, but the information was easy to find, navigate, understand, and to visually see the structure. We also felt that orientation to council should be a requirement, whether that be in person and or motivate the counselor to go online and do a tutorial.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Good morning. Jose Aponte, at large. Now, understand we took a more global view, and if the group would like to add on, please do. Globally, we talked about the questions of effectivity, the correlation between council with the association's plan of work, staff. Are there linkages there that we're missing? Clarification simply, what is the mission of the council? Consent agenda, a constructive option that came out of the group. Consent agenda, the less controversial certainly to move meetings a little faster. No one had Rezo on this. Are we too big for effectivity? There was some good conversation around that. Well, we have 60,000 members, and we have, what, 452,000 in the council? All right. That's a little joke. Little joke. All right. So early. A couple more cups of coffee. All right. Hey, we're not weighing in on it. Come on, Keith. Early. Okay. Two meetings. A question about two meetings. Are they less efficient? Are they less effective? How could we be more efficient? The virtual option was discussed at the roundtable, and the virtual option, there was some question and discussion about the transparency of that virtual discussion. Again, the genesis of a good conversation. And then ultimately, expense versus the value added of our current process. From my perspective as a director, that's a consultant cost-benefit analysis. Someone comes in and says, this is a more efficient or effective way to do it.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Larry Romans, Councillor at Large, saving the best for last.
Of course. Of course.
No and elephants. They chose me because otherwise I wouldn't get a chance to talk. we also did 41 and 35, and we left 35 for the other people who did 41 and 35, and focused on the relationship between council and executive board, and I think we came up with some top ideas. Obviously, the most important thing is communication, and there are some very practical things that I think we can do relatively easily, and the group thought so. One is to have a council document included at every conference, like we have rules, to have it on the difference between the executive board and the council. And after a short statement for each, under each one, list four or five examples of what an executive board might cover in a year, and four or five examples of what the council might cover in a year. And to have a video of that as well that could be viewed by members, new councillors, and councillors that need remedial help. In addition to that, have a document that is a flow chart, sort of like how a bill becomes the law, and to show that how a particular thing ends up where it does. And a video about that would be particularly useful to people. We particularly want this to happen at orientation, although, again, you know, all of us could use to look at these from time to time. One of the other things that we talked about was that, for example, we got the information about what the executive board had done at midwinter here, but it would be great if we could have information about all four of the sets of meetings and more quickly. And I think part of that may be that all of us don't read the things that were already sent, but I think that would be useful. And we want to share the notion of or agree to the idea of a consent agenda to allow more time for these kinds of things. And I know Ellie is not big on consent agendas, but we feel that parliamentary procedure should serve us and not the other way around, which I'm sure Ellie would agree with.
Thank you. I commend all of you for helping to complete this part of our agenda within the time frame. If my watch is correct, we're a little bit ahead. I have 4 points in closing. The first is,
before you close, I think
this you may have a minute, Mary.
Mary Bibelow, Council.
Certainly.
Large. Whilst listening to all the reports that came in, and you can correct me, maybe it's only because we're here as counselors are we conscious of all of these things that affect us. But the membership is not mentioned in here, any of this discussion. A lot of people would like to know how to be a counselor, but we don't tell them. Is it a secret society? And so therefore, I want to know, how are we going to approach these new people or the people who are out there? Not everybody wants to be on council, because I know I've given petitions to people and they say, not now, Mary, I served once, I don't want to come back again. Well, some of us do want to serve on council. Now, you take me, I won't say I'm a junkie, but I really like being in the midst of things and trying to create policy that will move us forward.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that comment, because it really takes us to one of the things I wanted to close with, and that is what happens next. So I'll take advantage of this and I'll shift. As I mentioned, we will set up a group on ALA Connect to enable this discussion to move forward. I also want to observe, as the person who facilitated this, the quality and the range of the ideas that emerged in a very short period of time, the number of ideas that are coming from your actual experience, but the extent to which some of these seem to be really moving us forward toward the future. And of course, there's always a challenge when you have this kind of a discussion to create a summary and bring the ideas together, but that is something that will be very important for us to do and to do soon. Your colleague, Pam Hickson-Stevens, is the new chair of the Council Committee on Orientation. I probably got that wrong. But she has already approached me, and we're going to be working together very closely to move all of this forward. And I do want to particularly thank those of you who stepped forward and were willing to report, for being able to manage the time so well, and for the several of you who were using techniques to help move the group along. We're going to focus here because of others who have said this is one example of that. And I also want to acknowledge the extent to which it seemed from the reports you were really going back to the survey itself. We've been able to work from that data, from those results, but I think the work you've done this morning is going to enable us to move forward and really build upon the knowledge that came out here. And I thank you very much for the privilege of being your facilitator. Oh, yeah. Keith, who's probably really my boss rather than I'm his boss, reminded me that we want the papers to be submitted to Lois Ann.
Microphone number 3.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. This is just for clarification. I think I understood, but all of this discussion is going to be pulled together and it will be reported back.
Yes.
Not just on Connect, I hope, but also the Council listserv. Please and thank you.
Yes, I'm going to actually report about what the next steps are. But first, I want to thank Maureen for facilitating this session. And I think we just had an illustration, if you didn't have it before in your work life, of why Maureen gets so much business around these kinds of conversations and facilitation. So thank you very much, Maureen. So following this conference, the Council Orientation Committee will work with ALA Parliamentarian Ellie Mina, ALA Executive Director Keith Michael Fields, and others to further analyze the feedback from this discussion and development recommendations for your consideration at the 2013 midwinter meeting. This will also go on to ALA Connect, where there can be some conversations and additional opportunities to contribute thoughts. I'm sure the Committee on Orientation, Pam and the committee and Ellie, will come up with some ways to make sure we can generate some discussion so that the recommendations that will come back to you at midwinter will allow additional input from you and conversation so that we come back with recommendations that seem to be what this council is most interested in moving forward. Now I would like to suggest that we take a break for 15 minutes. We will follow the break immediately with the report from the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group, and then we'll move on to our new business. So my watch says, just look at your watch. If it doesn't say the same thing as mine, calculate 15 minutes. I will reconvene at about 1042. Before we take up the next item on our agenda, I'd like to invite Larry Romans, chair of the Resolutions Committee, back to microphone number 3 for an additional comment that he would like to make. Larry?
Larry Romans, counselor at large. I left off one of the best comments that was made in our group, and I'd just like to mention it now, and that is that when executive board candidates are nominated, that there be kind of a mini orientation for them about what executive board does. Because as a former executive board member, I listen to the speeches, and half of the things that the candidates talk about, they don't have anything to do with that on the executive board. And someone else made that comment, and I left it off. Sorry.
Thank you. I now direct you to ALA Council Document Number 30.1 and call upon Sari Feldman and Robert Wolven, co-chairs of the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group, to present their report.
Thank you, Molly. We'll be taking a sort of a tag team approach with this. I'll lead off and then turn things over to Sari. As Molly noted, you have a written report, so we're not going to go through that in any detail, but try to touch on some of the high points and significant activities over the last few months since midwinter, and then a little bit about what's been happening at this conference and where we will be going in the next few months as well. So I'll be talking first about some of the work we've been doing with publishers, with intermediaries and distributors, and with author groups. We've had a series of meetings over in February, March, and May with 6 major publishers at the senior management of those organizations, with 4 the intermediaries who are either in this ebook space or entering the space now, and with 4 author groups representing different types of authors, interests, and constituencies. These meetings have been attended by Molly Raphael, Maureen Sullivan, Keith Fields, and either Sari or myself, and Alan Inouye from the Office of Information Technology Policy. I think they've been useful in several regards, each a bit different with each of these constituencies. With the publishers in particular, it gave us a chance for a free and frank and open exchange of views. We've had a chance to present the interests and concerns of libraries very cogently, I believe, and we've heard a great deal from them about what their perspective is and interests and concerns. And while there are some commonalities, there are also some differences among them. And we've had a subgroup of the working group working on business models, focusing primarily at the moment on public libraries and ebooks. And the meetings with publishers have been helpful in that regard because they help us to make the case of what is most significant to libraries, what is most likely to get an initial buy-in from publishers that we can use as a starting point. We recognize we're not going to reach the final stage of ideal models as the first step, so we need to have a progression, and we've been making that point with the publishers as we move along. I think most significantly, it's opened up channels of communication to the senior management, and those channels have stayed open. I think in just about every case, we've had continuing communications with publishers as they start to either re-enter or think about entering the ebook market with public libraries. And that's been helpful to keep the exchange of interests open there. We hope that will continue. We're starting to see developments. We hope to see more of them soon, and we expect that dialogue with the working group to go on. The business model subgroup that I mentioned has met face-to-face in late April as you try to take some of the discussions and information we've been hearing and craft them into a series of points that will identify those characteristics that are of most importance to libraries, those that are most least desirable or most objectionable, depending on which way you want to phrase that, And that can be used both among the library community in working with publishers and working with distributors to express what we want to see, and then also as talking points with those groups more broadly. As with many things that Sari will be mentioning as well, this conference gives us really the first opportunity for the subgroups that we've formed to meet face-to-face. We had a full group meeting at midwinter. We formed the subgroups immediately afterwards. They've been working, but we're really coming together now for the first time. And so there are a number of documents that are taking shape at this conference and that we hope, we expect, will be issued shortly afterwards, including two centered around business models. I should also mention in terms of that context that the next area we will turn to in terms of business models is for school libraries. We've had school librarians on the business model group. As we've been talking about them, it's been very helpful to understand where there are differences between the different sectors. And we recognize that some of the characteristics that we're putting forward for public libraries will play out differently in the school library sphere. And that's a rapidly evolving area that needs attention very soon. So that is the immediate next focus on the business model side. We also agreed that I'm going to be the one who gives thanks for various people who've been involved in this effort. And if I forget anything, Sari can immediately chime in afterwards. We want to thank, of course, the members of the working group themselves. They've been fantastic. The group has really come together, and the composition has been excellent. There are people with extensive backgrounds in virtually every aspect, so if one group needs advice that they don't have the right membership, they can turn to someone else within the working group for that. We've also recruited help from additional members for particular issues as we move forward, where we feel we need additional representation on the different subgroups. The ALA Washington office staff has been fantastic. They've really helped us keep organized, move along, provide a tremendous amount of support and intelligence as we moved into these meetings with background information. And of course, ALA leadership has been terrific in this. We wouldn't be anywhere if we hadn't had people like Molly and Maureen and Keith at these meetings as well. That really stresses the importance of all of this and enables us to react and respond rapidly to developments in the area. Have I left anyone out? Let me turn it over to Sari then.
Although I also want to give thanks to my co-chair, who has been fantastic. Thank you, Molly, for pointing us to work together and getting to know each other. I want to call your attention to page 4 of the report, where we've listed many of the outreach efforts, articles that have appeared in print or on the radio, as well as some speaking that has been done. I think a couple of things I will highlight is the fact that I know Molly, as she's gone around and spoken to state chapters and other programs, has consistently talked about this issue and made sure the membership is aware of the work that is going on. I think the consistency and kind of the drumbeat with publishers, with distributors, with the press about this issue has kept it in the spotlight and has kept a very high level of attention, which in the long run will be good for some kind of resolutions. Hopefully you've all seen at this point the digital supplement to American libraries, and also may have had pointed to you the Huffington Post op-ed piece on the topic recently, and also a news release that came out on our response to the Pew report that quotes Molly in that as well. A couple of things that are coming up that I also want to highlight. I can't stress enough that the business models group will be looking at the issue of school libraries, and I want to comment that it's also, we'll be looking at the business models of distributors, because we know that will be particularly impactful for school libraries, and as there are new distributors coming into the marketplace, that we want to have kind of this, not quite a scorecard, but commentary on the models that they present to all kinds of libraries, particularly school libraries. We will be looking at issues of accessibility, which are quite critical, and also privacy and ethics. You can look forward, as Bob mentioned, very soon, the first report on business models, also a tip sheet on DRM, Digital Rights Management, that will be coming out. And I think today there was some additional talking points around the Pew report that were released, and we want to create some of these documents in a form that can be better used by a broader membership. One of our working groups is looking at the topic of facilitating production of digital content in libraries, that idea of directly producing information, and we will be hearing more about that. And also ALA is cooperating with OverDrive to collect data to help our better understand the user behaviors as it relates to e-books, and in a way that will blend with the Pew report. And I want to say that so far there have been 22,000 consumer surveys collected on this topic. I think that covers everything, and Bob and I are available to answer any questions that people have. And again, thank you very much, all of you, for this.
Thank you, Sari and Bob. Are there questions? Microphone number 3.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. Thank you very much for your very serious work, and I'm glad that accessibility issues are now in train to be looked at. But I would really express a concern that on an ongoing basis it be folded into the business model and everything else, because retro engineering of these e-products is extremely expensive, and it's much better to have it into the first business plan and get the model out broadly so that people don't reinvent the wheel.
I just want to say it is one of the criticisms of DRM that it is very difficult to make that content accessible, and we understand that, and I think that there will be kind of a position evolved on accessibility as part of business models from vendors and distributors.
I would just second that. This came up in the meeting of the full working group last night, this very need that you expressed, and the need to act, especially as more distributors are entering into the field and developing their platforms. This is the time to address this now.
Thank you. Microphone number 6.
Yes, Rocco Steno, New York State Chapter Counselor. I know that many of the state chapters are anxious to work in concert with ALA. What role should state chapters be playing to assist and support the work of your group?
I think as some of our next work, we are going to be looking at what is the public communication plan, and we are going to be polishing up talking points and making them more accessible. And I think state chapters and their outreach effort then throughout their states will be a critical point of contact for getting this information out there. We're also hoping that some of the national press releases can be retrofitted then to help create more news releases into local and regional newspapers. So we'll be in touch about that. Thank you, Rocco.
Microphone number 3.
Mary Mallory, member at large. I had a meeting canceled, and I'd really like to go to this program that you mentioned at 1:30. Could you tell us where that is? I left my program back in my room. Thank you.
I'm so glad you asked. That was what I was supposed to say and forgot. There is a public meeting at which Sari and I will both be speaking about the work of the working group, and we also have a panel of very interesting and distinguished speakers. This is at 1:30 to 3:30. It's in the Hilton, California B, so we hope to see some of you there.
I have one concluding remark that I'd like to make. We are really excited, Maureen, that our liaison is Barbara Stripling, and we look forward to having her participate and bring information back to ALA leadership. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sari and Bob, and also your full working group for the excellent work they've been doing, and I know a pretty full agenda going forward. So thank you, and thank you for your leadership. We will now take up new business. The chair now calls upon Larry Romans, chair of the Resolutions Committee, to inform council of any policy implications related to the following membership resolutions, which are now ALA Council Document Number 40, Resolution on Voter Suppression in America, and ALA Council Document Number 41, School Libraries and Librarians Are Critical to Educational Success. Where is Larry? Okay, we'll, when he comes back in, we'll go back to that. Microphone three.
Sarah Kelly Johns, AASL Division Counselor. We had asked that the school library resolution be moved to Council 2. Is that and we had asked Larry to about that. Is so that a problem?
Okay, the agenda has been approved, so I need the consent of the body. Is there anyone who objects? Okay, we'll move it to Council 2.
Thank you. We're still doing a few revisions.
Okay, then we will move on to, as when Larry comes back in, I will go and ask him to respond to this request, but we will now move to the Council Document Number 40, Resolution on Voter Suppression in America, as it is displayed on the overhead. I will read the resolve clauses aloud. This has come from membership. Resolved that the American Library Association opposes voter ID laws, restrictions on voter registration, cuts to early voting, and any other laws resulting in the restriction of lawful access to voting, and encourages libraries and librarians to provide information to citizens to mitigate these restrictions should they remain in effect on Election Day. Is there discussion? Microphone number four.
Al Kagan, CERT Counselor. Well, this resolution came from CERT to the membership meeting. And I'd like to just give you a little background here. Most of the information that are in the whereas clauses came directly from the website of the ACLU. There are two documents that you can find there that we used. One is just called Voter Suppression in America. The other one is called Let People Vote Resources. And the point that the ACLU is trying to make in their documents is that voter fraud is extraordinarily rare, and they cite several studies. And it's probably the one that's most, that gives you some actual numbers, is the one that was carried out by the Department of Justice in 2002. Was called Ballot Access and Voting Integrity Initiative. And they found that there were only 26 convictions or guilty pleas for fraud between 2002 and 2005. They cite several other studies, but this one has actual numbers. So, in fact, all of these initiatives that are being taken in various states, and there are 15 states that have passed such laws, and 5 more states have laws pending, are really not addressing any real problem. And voting suppression hits disenfranchised groups historically, such as people of color, the elderly, students, and people with disabilities. So we feel, in CERT, and membership agreed, that ALA ought to be out in front on this, and we hope you approve this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Mary Bibelow, Counselor at Large. I am the seconder of this resolution, and I would like to make the following statement. My generation believed that ALA was a truly socially responsible organization. E.J. Josey and ALA led the fight against segregated state libraries, and they ALA signed on to opposition to the war in Vietnam. ALA in support for their Equal Rights Amendment moved their conferences from Illinois when Illinois refused to endorse the Equal Rights Amendment. The opposition within ALA at that time said this action could, that ALA could not afford this type of an action. The opposition was proven wrong, and we hardly ever meet in Chicago anymore. ALA also overwhelmingly endorsed the culture boycott against apartheid in South Africa. When some within ALA said this was not a library issue. Now I say to this generation, and I say this, that this generation has to stand up to the challenges of today. We cannot, or they cannot, sit by and let several states impose a modern poll tax on them. If you do not know what a poll tax is, I say Google it. Can we stand by and watch our rights and liberties be snatched away from us and not say a word, nor not try to do anything about it? I say we can't afford this. I urge you to endorse this resolution. And at this time, I would like to say the Black Caucus endorsed this resolution. And I don't know if it's too late for any of the rest of the caucuses to endorse it. However, I would say each and every one of you should have an open mind.
Thank you, Mary. Your time is up. Thank you. Microphone number 5.
Mario Gonzalez, Counselor at Large. I stand here in favor of this resolution. My library budget has to be approved by vote, and the Board of Education budget in my community has to be approved by vote. The turnout is always very low, and I hope that that's by choice, not because people are not able to vote. As I vote in my home state of New York, I do not have to show anything to vote. My signature is my ID. So I really would be very saddened to see that people who are eligible to vote in the United States are not being allowed to do this. So for those of us who think that this doesn't impact libraries, it does. It impacts school libraries and it impacts public libraries in terms of having their budgets approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number 4.
Sue Cam, Councilor at Large. In California, it is possible for people to become permanent absentee ballot voters. It's very easy. All you do is fill out a form. I think you do everything online, and you are sent your ballot and some of your ballot materials, and then you can mail them in to the county registrar of voters. This is something maybe more people should know about, although I believe Secretary of State this year said that something like half of registered voters in California do vote by mail ballot. The other thing is I want to echo what Mario said about librarians getting involved and getting out the vote. There are frequently issues that directly affect libraries, such as passing the budget. And I think it is incumbent upon us as individuals in our own areas to work on get out the vote projects and participate in that. I'd also like to call people's attention, if they haven't already seen it, Troy, Michigan Public Library was faced with opposition from the Tea Party people for a small raise in the tax to support the library. What the library supporters did was they made a short, they said, we are going to have a book burning party on such and such a date. And people just rose up in righteous wrath and said, how can you possibly support burning books? And then they turned that into a positive thing, that if the library is, if this measure is voted down, that's what's going to happen with the libraries. It's not a tax issue, it's a library support issue, and it's an access to information.
Thank you. Microphone number six.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Councillor at Large. I'm going to be somewhat heretical. In all of this, I want to emphasize that I certainly believe in the power of the vote and the power of everybody who possibly can get registered to vote to do that. My concern is that clause number one is well-meaning, well-intended librarians saying something, and where is that going to go? I do think that my library registers voters, my library participates in providing voter information. In other aspects of my life, I'm working on it, but my concern is with number one. So I do have a motion to amend, to strike clause one, and I do have a second, and I actually already gave it to Lois Ann, so it's on the screen.
Thank you. So now we are discussing the amendment to strike the first whereas clause. So the resolution would delete the amendment would delete opposes voter ID laws, restrictions on voter registration, cuts to early voting, and any other laws resulting in the restriction of lawful access to voting, and the second clause would remain. Is there discussion on the amendment? Microphone three, point of information.
Mary Bibolo, I thought we were limiting our discussion to the resolve clause.
That's right, and this is an amendment that would strike the first resolve clause, the number one in the resolve clause.
Okay, then. Okay. I'm not sure.
Okay. So microphone number three.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large, an advocate for individuals with disabilities who would be very largely discriminated against with some of these voter ID laws, because it's difficult for them to get to the place where they can get ID. In my opinion, if we strike number one, that vitiates the entire reason for this motion. So I oppose it, because I think the restrictions that we're seeing come in are directly impacting many of our user groups, individuals with disabilities, seniors, other people who have difficulty in getting to a place to get an ID, the poor who cannot afford a car, and if they live in a county, they cannot get to the county seat. I oppose this amendment.
Thank you. Microphone number five.
Zora Sampson, Councillor at Large. In addition to the difficulties, I'm in favor of keeping number one.
And you're speaking in opposition to the amendment.
Opposition, yes, thank you. In addition to the difficulties of giving accurate information when there's so much turmoil and change in these laws, I just want to call everyone's attention to the difficulties that some of my elderly patrons have faced when they do no longer drive. And even though you may say, as some of our senators and legislators have told me, they should not be embarrassed to have to go get an ID and admit they don't drive anymore. It's very embarrassing for some of them. They've got their library card and they've been voting for a long time, but now suddenly they have to go back and say, now I have to get another card because I'm not allowed to drive anymore. I can't pass the test. It's very embarrassing for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large.
I oppose the amendment as well. I think that people with disabilities often utilize libraries because if they're disenfranchised and don't have and live on limited incomes, then they are availing themselves of the assistive technology and the information gatekeeper expertise of librarians and library staff to help them. And I think that if they found out, you know, if as a citizen, a library patron found out that the library professional organization went along with suppressing voter voter restrictions, and that the effect that that would have on my ability or anyone's ability to obtain assistance, that would be horrible. Thank you.
Thank you. See, when seeing, speaking to the amendment.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I think you have already spoken, so let me take to the amendment. I'll come back to you. So, microphone four. Microphone four. Oh, Sue?
Excuse me. Sue Cam, Councillor at Large. California has a provision where people can get a state issued ID. They do have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and if you're a senior citizen, it's free. It's good for 10 years. It's a photo ID, which is acceptable any place people want for photo IDs. I would encourage librarians who live in areas that don't provide state IDs for people who don't drive to work with your legislatures to get them to enact such laws, which would make it easier for people to.
I'm not sure this is really speaking to the amendment, whether to strike or not. You're encouraging people to act within their home districts, and that's fine, but I don't think quite appropriate for the council floor. Microphone number six.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Councilor at Large, trying to channel Janet Swan Hill as best I can, and it's just really hard because she's in Colorado. I appreciate people coming up to me and saying, you know, when you strike clause one, strike clause two as it stands doesn't make any sense. And so I do have an amendment to the amendment that would clarify the wording, and I will get this up as soon as I can, but basically encourages librarians, libraries and librarians to provide information to citizens regarding restrictions of their access to voter registration.
Well, let's. I think what we can do is, I think this would be a comment up with the cleanup.
But no, I think it's
okay. If you vote the motion up or down to the amendment, then that's when we need to look at cleaning up the language.
As long as you understand it's not.
Okay. All right. So what we're doing right now is, I'm sorry. Microphone number three.
Yes, Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor, and I am speaking in opposition to the amendment that is up there on the screen. And I am pointing out the fact that in Missouri, and I'm sure in many places, libraries provide voter registration as one of the services to their community. Our staff are deputized to do voter registration. So we would actually be put in the position of facing people across the desk and telling them that they cannot register to vote because they don't have the required identification. And I think that makes it even more important for this organization to go on record and say, we are making these statements under protest, we do not agree with them, and we oppose these kinds of laws and restrictions.
Microphone number three.
Mary Biblo, Councilor at Large, again. I oppose this here. This resolution, she's brought up two or three of this amendment to this resolution on the grounds that I do believe it was in the Declarations of Independence that it says we are entitled to have the right to vote. And so I think if you are legally here and you have all the legal qualifications, except for these changes that these states are making, you should be entitled to vote. If some of you read in the New York Times not too long ago, there was a 92-year-old black woman who had marched during the voters' rights passage of trying to get the voters' rights passage that Lyndon Johnson introduced into Congress. And here, this woman had participated in all of the civil rights movements and was denied the right to vote. And who in the world could have the audacity to question whether she was married or she had the proper identifications after voting for about 92 years? I thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone. Microphone number four.
Nick Buron, Yalta Counselor. It is very, very hard to get up here after Al and Mary. Your arguments are extremely, extremely sound. This issue is extremely important. When I saw it in its first incarnation, to be quite honest, I found it difficult for it to be germane to what I am here to vote for. I am rising in favor of the amendment. What I would like is to do what we do best and to provide information on issues that are important. I think I'm in favor of the amendment. I would like to clean it up a little bit more. And thank you.
Microphone four.
Pat Wan, Counselor at Large. I, over the years, have fallen very strictly on the side of analyzing our resolutions in terms of the association mission and strategic goals. And I have, frankly, come full circle on this particular resolution. I am speaking against the amendment because I have been convinced again that libraries are fundamental to a democracy. They provide the information to inform citizens so they can vote. And so many of those important libraries are publicly supported, thereby depend upon taxpayers and those same voters to support them. So I think I have been convinced by you all who spoke over the last 24 hours, and particularly starting with the membership meeting yesterday, that this indeed is a concern for the American Library Association. I again speak against this amendment, and I will be voting for the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. I've been having side conversations about this, and several people have mentioned that they would like to have something like this come up at council forum. Is this the time to do that, or after we vote on the amendment?
Can you, your voice was just not there most of the...
Aaron Dobbs. Sorry. Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. It's kind of scary.
They do try to adjust the microphone, so sometimes it comes up right halfway through the talk.
It's a process question and a comment. The process question is this now the time to suggest we move this to a council forum discussion and come back, or is this the amendment only and then we can talk about it?
We are discussing the amendment. Once we vote on the amendment, then we go back to the main motion, either as amended or not. And then we can talk about what we do with that main motion, which can be to amend it, to fix it if this amendment passes, or to do other things.
Okay.
Microphone number five.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I think, I'm very much opposed to the amendment. Because if you take number one out, that's the guts of what we're doing. Number two, we're left with resolving that the American Library Association encourages libraries and librarians to provide information. Hell, that's what we've been doing all this time anyway.
So we're encouraging ourselves to continue to do what we're already doing. And that doesn't seem to me to make much sense or warrant a resolution from this council. So I, taking number one out takes the very meat of the whole resolution away, and I'm very much opposed to doing that.
Thank you. Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large, call the question.
There's no one at the microphone, so in fact, we don't really need to close debate unless somebody starts to get up, and then I will vote. But we do not need to take the vote to close debate. So now you are voting on the amendment, which is to strike the first clause from the first resolve clause. Are you ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Okay, this is voting to strike the clause, right? Okay, raise one of your hands. All those opposed to striking the clause, please raise one of your hands. The amendment is defeated. We now go back to the original motion. I'm sorry. Mark your ballots, Council Document Number 40, Strike First Resolve. If I might break right now, because we earlier asked Larry Romans, as the chair of the Resolutions Committee, if there were any policy implications related to this resolution. For comment, if Larry could step to the microphone so that council will simply be informed of there are or are not before we go back to the discussion. Microphone number three.
Larry Romans, chair of the Resolutions Committee. I apologize for being out of the room. I don't see any policy implications of this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone number six. Now we're discussing the resolution as it was presented.
Aaron Dobbs, Councillor at Large. I've placed the motion over there. I'm moving, and I have a second that we postpone discussion until Council 2 based on feedback received through side conversations.
This is a, is, do you have a second?
Michael Goldberg.
Okay. Okay, this is a motion now to postpone discussion to Council 2, which is tomorrow morning, so that Council Forum can discuss the resolution. Is there discussion on the motion to postpone? Microphone number five.
Jim Neal, a member of Council and Executive Board. Let's get on with this. I embrace Mary's advocacy on civil rights and voting laws. I embrace the roles of libraries in democracy, but this is politically central to what we are. It's not just people voting for our budgets, it's the people we send to our state capitals, it's the people we send to Washington who pass the laws, who pass the budgets. They influence the ability of our libraries to serve our users. If we're not all about political process, then we are not doing our job as librarians. So let's get on with it.
Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. Hooray to the last comments. We're going to have a full agenda in Council 2 and 3. And I think what I'm hearing from the feedback with the applause, etc., is this is a motion that people have reviewed, that they have embraced, and that they want to vote on. Thank you.
I oppose the amendment.
You oppose the motion to postpone until Council 2. Microphone number three.
Mary Bibelow at Large. I oppose this amendment. We might as well start off with, to begin with. Why are we procrastinating when this type of amendment affects us all? It affects libraries. If you read your library manual and you go through it, you will see where we are a service organization. We are supposed to inform people. This is not a partisan resolution. This is getting to the heart of what we are. Keith Fields stood up there and says, just yesterday at the membership meeting, we should try to find ways to become active in the community. If this is not one avenue, there are a number of avenues. And I don't understand why we're sitting here debating something which is very clear and which is a part of us as an organization.
Thank you. I just want to remind Council that we have about half an hour left. Pardon?
I just want to say thanks to Jim Nils. I could not have followed a better person.
I'm just calling Council's attention to the time. We are now talking still about the motion to postpone microphone number 4.
Sue Cam, point of order, or actually a question for Ellie. Is this kind of motion debatable? Or is this one of the motions that is really not debatable?
It is debatable.
Okay.
But I see no one at a microphone now to debate. I can't tell when people are moving further back to chairs. Okay, so we're ready now to vote on the motion to postpone to Council 2. If you are in favor of postponing to Council 2, please raise one of your hands. If you are opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion is defeated. We are now back to the original motion. Is there further discussion? Microphone number 6.
Valeria Feig, counselor for the Library Support Staff Interest Roundtable, and I have submitted a motion to amend resolved number 2 to make that state to include library support staff. So it would read, encourages libraries, librarians, and library support staff to provide information.
Can I ask the councils you consider this a housekeeping amendment, in which case we can add it directly? Is there any objection? Okay, this is delegated to the executive director, and so noted. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. Is there further discussion? Microphone 6, yes? Okay, microphone 6.
Jenny Emanuel, counselor at large, and I frame this comment in that I am an academic librarian and I haven't worked in public libraries in 10 years. But I really struggle with this, and in theory I support it, but I struggle with it because most public libraries require some form of ID, oftentimes a photo ID, to get a library card. So some of the same arguments that we're arguing for voting apply to using libraries as well. And it just seems somewhat hypocritical for us, but, I do support it in theory.
Thank you. Microphone number 6.
Peter Hepburn, GLBT Roundtable Counselor. The GLBT community is keenly sensitive to limitations on rights, as you might imagine. And so yesterday at Roundtable Steering, the Steering Committee voted to endorse this in principle. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphones, we're now ready to vote on the main motion. This is the main motion that was submitted originally, so there are no changes to it. Would all those in favor of the main motion please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, Council Document Number 40. We postpone that one until tomorrow. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 42, Resolution in Support of Whistleblower Bradley Manning. Would Councilor Al Kagan please go to the microphone and read only the resolved clause of ALA Council Document Number 42. Microphone number 4.
Resolved that the American Library Association calls upon the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the United States Army to release PFC Bradley Manning from pretrial confinement and drop the charges against him.
Do you wish to, and you have a second?
Yes, Mike Marlin.
And do you wish to speak to your motion?
Yes, I do.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. Some of you may remember that we debated this motion in the membership meeting and previous to that in council forum, but it was never brought, it was never debated on the council floor because it was tabled. And so we're bringing it back again, and I would like to advise the council that Daniel Ellsberg is one of the chief supporters of Bradley Manning. Daniel Ellsberg has said, "I was Bradley Manning." We supported Daniel Ellsberg, and some of us listened to him speak last conference last year and saw his film. We see how important it is for whistleblowers to tell us what our government is doing. This is what Bradley Manning has done. Bradley Manning has said he wants discussion, debates, and reforms, and he wants to the people to know the truth. Some of the things that have come out from the files that went through WikiLeaks are there was an official policy to ignore torture in Iraq. There is an official tally of civilian deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan that was denied. Guantanamo prison has held mostly innocent people and low-level operatives. The State Department authorized the theft of the UN Secretary General's DNA. The US government withheld information about the indiscriminate killing of Reuters journalists and innocent Iraqi civilians. The State Department blocked corporate opposition to a Haitian minimum wage law. U.S. officials were told to cover up evidence of child abuse by contractors in Afghanistan. The Japanese and U.S. governments have been warned about the seismic threat at Fukushima. The Obama administration allowed Yemen's president to cover up a secret U.S. drone bombing campaign. Known Egyptian torturers received training from the FBI at Quantico, Virginia. Well, we ought to know these things. How did we get to know them? Because we have a brave individual named Bradley Manning. And we think we need to support him. We need to know what our government is doing. This is the way we can find out sometimes. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Microphone number four. A six, I'm sorry, six was first. It was a shorter walk.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. Speaking on behalf of all my friends in the military, am I not coming through?
You're okay.
Speaking on behalf of all my friends in the military, under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Bradley Manning made his choice. He disobeyed orders. He blew a whole lot of things. And while I support the fact that he released all this information, it's been used both for and against the United States. It's out there. Everyone has access to it. The next resolution coming up on WikiLeaks, I'll probably have a different position that will surprise a lot of people. But Mr. Manning made his choice. He's got to sleep in the bed that he made. You cannot go outside the chain of command in the military. Can't. If you do, bad things happen. And they have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number four.
Maggie Farrell, ACRL. Counselor, ACRL does not support this resolution. And on a personal note, I agree with the previous statement. As a military intelligence officer in the military, what he did was illegal and did significant harm. So as a vet, I personally oppose this resolution. But we had a lot of discussion within ACRL, and the consensus is that ACRL does not support this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Brian Schottlander, elects counselor, elects joins ACRL in not supporting this resolution for three reasons primarily. First of all, we believe it stretches, shall we say, the definition in federal statute terms of the term whistleblower. Second of all, we believe that a significant number of ALA members are likely to disagree with such a resolution, and we fear that as a consequence, ALA's membership numbers could be negatively impacted were the resolution to pass. And thirdly, we fear that if the resolution were to pass, it would undermine ALA's standing in the future on intellectual freedom discussions, where our voice might and might need to carry some weight.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large, seconder of the resolution. My understanding, and we heard this from the Bradley Manning Support Network representative yesterday, is that the military soldiers are, it's either through the United Nations Human Rights Commission or through the Geneva Convention, soldiers are supposed to come forward when they witness crimes, and much of the information was not classified. Mr. Manning saw that crimes had been committed, and it was his duty and obligation to come forward and divulge that information. So he did that. He has, had patriotic motivations, as he said, and as others have evidenced through interviews with his family and with his comrades. And so I think we should support him. Although he's an alleged whistleblower, I think it's fairly obvious that he falls under the definition of whistleblower, and like other intelligence officials who take the same pledge when they enter government service, they are supposed to come forward and divulge crimes that the government has committed.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Pat Weaver Myers, Oklahoma chapter counselor. And Bradley Manning is from Oklahoma, and I am concerned about and abhor the alleged treatment that he seems to be receiving. I am very concerned that we would have a resolution in which we would put ourselves as the judge and jury and the justice system that, and say that we think he should be released when, I'm sorry, but I don't believe any of us have sufficient evidence to make that assessment, and that there are justice systems in place to do that. So for that reason, I oppose the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Sue Kam, Councillor at Large. For those who think that passage of this resolution has nothing to do with intellectual freedom, I should like to point out on the reverse side of the resolution, there is a list of ALA units which have endorsed it, and one of them is the Intellectual Freedom Committee. And isn't this supposed to be the Intellectual Freedom Roundtable? Oh, they were consulted. The Intellectual Freedom Units in ALA were consulted and apparently found no problems with this resolution.
Could someone who was commenting and talking about it step to the microphone and say to the body what you're talking about? Al, are you going to speak?
Yeah, just a point of information. We consulted those bodies. That doesn't mean that those bodies endorse the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Larry Romans, Councilor at Large. In fact, I am sure that a number of these groups, in fact, decided not to endorse it and opposed it, and GLBTRT is one of them.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone, we will now take a vote on Council Document Number 42. Would all those in favor of this resolution raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed, raise one of your hands. The motion is defeated. Please mark your ballots, Council Document Number 42. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 43, Resolution on Access to Information and WikiLeaks. Would Councillor Al Kagan again please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 43?
Resolve that the American Library Association, ALA, 1, supports the rights of WikiLeaks to publish leaked government documents. 2, commends the efforts of WikiLeaks to expunge from documents names and other material deemed potentially harmful to innocent people. 3, commends WikiLeaks for performing a public service for making available important documents related to foreign and military policy. 4, recommends that libraries consider linking their websites to the WikiLeaks website where appropriate. And 5, condemns any harassment of WikiLeaks. Seconder is Mike Marlin, and I would like to speak to the motion.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So, why is it that ALA should support a resolution like this? Look at our core values: access, democracy, the public good, and social responsibility. ALA has a high profile on freedom of expression issues. We have an Office of Intellectual Freedom. ALA supported Daniel Ellsberg when he leaked the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times and the Washington Post. ALA signed an open letter on December 22, 2010, concerning possible application of the Espionage Act to WikiLeaks. In that letter, which noted that publishers and internet users' rights needed to be upheld. Publishers' rights to print truthful information, publishers' protection against liability from printing, internet users' rights to receive information, internet users' rights to voice opinions about government activities. ALA signed on to that letter. I think when you look at the number of print stories that have been related to the divulging the information divulged by WikiLeaks over the last couple of years, it's just truly astounding. WikiLeaks has given us a treasure trove of information that we would not get elsewhere. And WikiLeaks, after some initial hiccups, did remove the names of people that might be in danger from the documents that they disclosed. WikiLeaks is a very important organization. It's an organization we need to support. And right now, if we don't find a lot of support around the world for WikiLeaks, it's going to go down, and the members and some of the leaders are going to be in jail. We need to do something about this. This is our issue, freedom of expression. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed to a vote. No. Would all those in favor of Council Document Number 43, Resolution on Access to Information and WikiLeaks, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion is defeated. Please mark your ballots, Council Document Number 43. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the ALA Council, for announcements. Keith.
I'd like to begin by sharing information on registration. As of Saturday, registration stands at 11,359 attendees and 5,045 exhibitors for a grand total of 16,404. And that compares with 19,800 in New Orleans and 25,000 in Chicago, pardon me, Washington, D.C. in 2010. I have to ask you that counselors who have not picked up their document portfolios, please to do so. They're available at the Council Documents Pickup Station. Your portfolios should be used to collect and retain all Council documents distributed throughout the course of the conference. And please recall that once a document has been distributed, it will not be recopied or redistributed if it's moved to a subsequent agenda. So please hang on to those. As always, our goal is to enable council to function more efficiently while reducing document duplication and saving trees in the process. So do hang on to them in case the items are moved. And also, please be aware that although this room is a secure room, that other meetings are being held in it. Please don't leave computers or any valuables at your place or inside your portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Please be sure you have signed your vote tally card and pass it to the aisles for collections. Cards without names will be voided. I declare the first meeting of the ALA Council adjourned. Do you want to move straight into the APA agenda? Would you like a short break? No. Any objection? Okay. Give me a minute to flip in my book. So good morning, APA Council. I don't need to say kindly take your seats. At this meeting, unless there are objections, we will follow the rules that were approved at the 2005 annual conference meeting as identified in APA Council document number 3. Just as a reminder, please watch the overhead screen for motion description to use on your voting card. You may use only that description. If you want to speak at the microphone, please follow the same procedures that we have used with ALA Council. Motion forms must be completed on all motions. For your convenience, there are motion forms available at each end of your tables. Motion forms must be printed legibly as they are in ALA Council. You will be asked to raise your hand on all votes. Only if the votes seem close will I call for a standing vote. The chair has been advised that general consent should not be used for should only be used for routine or non-controversial decisions. May I dispense with the introductions of people on the dais? Okay, we need a quorum of 75 councilors, and I can been advised that we have 75 councilors. The agenda is APA Council Document 1.1, revised 6412, and all other documents are available at the pickup station. Under the 24-hour rule, we received no additional documents for this agenda. Do you have any new business to add? Are there any objections to the agenda? Hearing none, the chair declares the agenda adopted. You were emailed the minutes of the 2012 ALA Midwinter Meeting APA Council Document 2.1. Copies are also available at the document's pickup station in this room. Are there any corrections to be made? There are no corrections. The chair declares the ALA APA Council minutes from the 2012 ALA Midwinter Meeting adopted. Thank you. First on our agenda is a report from the ALA APA Executive Director, APA Council Document Number 5.1. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields to present his report.
We've shared the document with you. Basically provides some background information on where we stand with regard to the Certified Public Library Administrator Program, which at this point has 140 active members, and the Library Support Staff Certification Program, which currently has 263 active members, and also talks about the ongoing review of the competencies for the support staff certification. It has been 5 years. There also is some information on some pay equity issues that the APA has been involved in as well. So I think those are the highlights, other than that there is There was a fundraiser last night, and again, we continue to try and look at ways in which we can make sure that the APA is on a secure financial ground.
Thank you, Keith. Are there any questions? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will move on to the next item. I now call upon ALA APA Treasurer, and I direct you to APA Council Document Number 4.2 and 4.3, and call upon James G. Neal to present his report. Jim?
Yes, I'd like to provide you with an update on the current fiscal year APA budget. If you'll turn to Document 4.2, you'll see that through April, that is through 8 months of the year, we have established a revenue of $155,000, and you can see the categories in which we are raising our funds and the importance of the library work life in terms of our overall revenue plan this year. If you then turn and look at the expenses, you'll see that we have moderated the overall expenses for APA over the last year, and the total expenses are $81,000. Thus, at this point, leaving a net revenue of $73,220. We've looked out over the next 4 months, and we have a pretty good idea of what the revenue and expense picture will look like through the balance of the year, and sort of the end of summer projection at this point is $38,495. So when we end the year, that's the ballpark we should be in terms of the net revenue at the end of this fiscal year. You're going to note in the next slide that there has been a revision to the information at the bottom around the loan amount. The actual amount that was loaned to APA was $275,000. They have already paid 50. 25 will come out of the fiscal year 12 net revenues, and there is a projection of $25,000 to be paid out of the fiscal year 13 revenues, leaving a loan balance at the end of next fiscal year of $175,000. So this is where we find ourselves in terms of the current fiscal year. Now, if you'll turn to Budget Document 4.3, APA Document 4.3, I can speak briefly to the plan for the next fiscal year, and this will require an action by Council to approve the budgetary ceilings for APA. In the case of APA, the budgetary ceiling is defined by the anticipated revenues plus the unused balance in the loan. And that is the budgetary ceiling that we will be asking you to approve for APA. You'll note the operating revenues are projected to be $197,000 against operating expenses of $179,000. There are no surprises here. It does reflect basic operating procedures and programs and services. We do see some significant income coming, continuing to come from library work life, and because of the maturation and the growth of participation in the various certification programs of APA, $76,000 coming from those certification programs. The net then, if you'll turn to the budget summary, would be a net revenue of $17,680, thus providing us with, at the end of fiscal year 12, a net asset balance of a negative $145,728, the loan. At the end of fiscal year 13, that would improve to a negative $128,048. So just so you understand, this is not like the ALA budget, which tends to be more on the positive end. This is because of the loan balance, which continues to be paid down. Therefore, given these projections of a revenue of $197,294, a unused loan balance of $129,272, thus, we would be approving an APA budgetary ceiling of fiscal year 2013 of $326,566. And I so move.
Is there discussion? Seeing no one, microphone three.
Larry Ramos, Councilor at Large. It doesn't look like there's $25,000 worth of difference in 2013.
The decision on the removal of the funds does not take place until after the fiscal year and is done in the fall by the APA Executive Board.
But there still isn't $25,000 difference between the revenue and the expenses.
Not in the budget. We don't put that loan payment in the budget. That's a decision and a transfer that takes place after the end of the fiscal year. The only thing that's in the budget is the interest payment. Yeah, I mean, if there's not $25,000, then we would perhaps make a lower payment against the loan than $25,000. That's why we don't make that determination and put it into the budget plan until after the fiscal year.
Okay, but you say you're going to put back $25,000.
Yes, we are. That is the plan to put that in, okay, based on the anticipated revenues.
But your anticipated revenues and expenses don't end up $25,000.
Yes, but remember, we're ending up the current fiscal year with $38,495, okay, from which we would transfer $25,000.
Okay.
We would have more money left over, which when added to the $17,680 would give us the $25,000 that we need. Does that answer your question?
That last thing he said is exactly how I think what was needed to clarify it. So could you say that again, Jim?
We end this year, we project to end this year, with a positive fund balance of $38,495. That has not been our practice. The schedule of payments have been $25,000 a year, and so that's why I presented to that. Certainly the executive board, APA executive board, could make that decision. But the plan is to take out $25,000 a year.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, we will proceed to the vote. Would all those in favor of the ALA APA fiscal year 2013 budgetary ceiling of $326,566, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, ALA APA FY13 budgetary ceiling. Thank you, Jim. You got off the stage before I could thank you. At the 2012 midwinter meeting, the ALA APA Council discussed the recommendation of the Presidential Task Force for Improving the Effectiveness of ALA's Council regarding the ALA APA Council. Since midwinter, the ALA Executive Board has had an opportunity to review this discussion and the points that were raised. I now direct you to ALA APA Council Document Number 7.2 and call upon immediate past President Roberta A. Stevens to present the board's recommendation. Roberta?
Well, good morning, and I want to begin by saying thank you to all of the council members who were a part of the last year discussion on the Council Effectiveness Task Force's work, which took 2 hours. And there were quite a few recommendations, as you will recall, that were aimed at improving our efficiency as well as our effectiveness, and one of them had to do with ALA APA. And that was to eliminate the ALA APA Council with the intention primarily of saving that time so that we could begin to discuss issues of broader concern to the association. Another one of the recommendations had to do with the assessment of how we were functioning on council, which is what you all just did and we discussed. So we had determined that we would have a discussion at the midwinter meeting about the elimination of the ALA APA Council and the business being handled by the Executive Board. And there were feelings about that. There were concerns expressed about eliminating the Council's involvement entirely. And we most certainly heard what you had to say. You have a document. The document is CD 7.2, ALA APA CD 7.2. And it gives you, I think, a fairly good history if you begin from the back, actually, and move forward you will see the history of the thinking on this recommendation from the Council Effectiveness Task Force, very ably chaired by Jim Rettig, former ALA president. Where we are now is to propose to you that instead of the discussion item that occurred at midwinter, that in fact we move forward with a resolution that the ALA APA Council shall hold at least one meeting each year in conjunction with ALA Midwinter, and that all meetings of the ALA APA Council shall be open to ALA members and the press. So it keeps the line of communication open. One of the questions that no doubt you may have is, what if there is an issue, a resolution, that something occurs and we need to get that resolution on the floor for discussion by the ALA APA Council, and it occurs and at a, such a time that we need to do it at the annual conference? We will do it. We will convene the group. But this is as a matter of ongoing business. If we have routine, the types of routine work that we see occurring, for instance, today, that we would be limiting the sessions to one time per year. So I throw this open now for discussion by the members of the ALA APA Council.
Is there discussion? Microphone number five.
But I could see if I could trick you. Tom Wilding, counselor at large. My question, it's more of a question than discussion. We just approved the budget ceiling for APA for next year, and I don't know that we'd be ready to do that at midwinter. And so if we're going to meet once a year, shouldn't it be the annual conference where we can actually do that and not have to constantly interject a second meeting so that we could do the budget ceiling? I love the idea of one meeting. I think that's the balance. That's perfect. I just think the meeting at annual will be make more sense in terms of the timeline of the budget process.
Right, I totally understand your concern about timing. I'm going to ask Jim to step to the microphone with your indulgence and speak to that.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer. We certainly could provide numbers at midwinter based on the projections. The budget of APA has developed over the last several years in a way that I think we have a pretty good sense of what our overall revenue and expenses are. I think one of the challenges would be to project the end of year balance and the decision by the board what to apply to the principal. But I don't think we could, I think we could work with a midwinter date if necessary. So this should not drive the decision whether we do it at midwinter or annual.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Michael Golrick, counselor at large. And I apologize to my colleagues for not having been present and participating at the discussion in Dallas. I do rise in support of this motion. I would make the observation, however, that if we're interested in creating an organization that is agile and nimble, having a council prevents us from achieving that goal as effectively. And I think if I had been there in midwinter, I would have argued for discontinuing council and having the board, the ALA APA Board of Directors, be able to take those actions that are necessary, which does mean that the board can be a lot more nimble. They have processes in place for voting by conference call, and since I left the board, probably even doing some more things virtually. However, when APA was created, adding a council was a politically expedient decision with which I felt comfortable. However, we've lived with it now for a long time, and I would still informally make the argument that it probably is an appendage that is no longer necessary, not like many of our appendixes. So I do support the resolution, but encourage you to continue to consider whether or not the body is in fact necessary for the governance of an organization which has no members. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, we're ready to vote on the motion to amend the bylaws to read, the ALA-APA Council shall hold at least one meeting each year in conjunction with the ALA Midwinter Meeting. All meetings of the ALA-APA Council shall be open to ALA members and the press. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Excuse me, before I do that, I just need to declare to you that this will take a 3/4 vote. And the reason is that we needed to give 30 days notice that this was coming to the agenda in order to have a 2/3 vote, right?
Correct.
And so because it was less than 30 days, we need a 3/4 vote. I just want you to make you aware of that. So all those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, APA Council Document Number 7.2.
My thanks, and I also want to recognize Laurel Swader, who has been doing such a terrific job with ALA-APA.
Thank you very much, Roberta. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields, ALA-APA Executive Director and Secretary of the ALA-APA Council for announcements. Keith.
There are no additional announcements. Thank you.
Counselors who have not picked up their document portfolios are reminded to do that. I declare that the ALA-APA information set...
I'm sorry.
I'm so busy reading that. I'm sorry. Microphone number 4.
Ismail Abdullahi, Counselor at Large. The Diversity Councilors Caucus will meet near microphone 2 at the end of this meeting. Thank you.
You can leave them on the table. There will be other meetings in here. Microphone number 2.
Rodney Lipper, North Carolina Chapter Councilor and Council Forum co-convener. Just a reminder that Council Forum will meet tonight, 8:30 to 10, Anaheim Marriott, Newport Beach, and Rancho Las Palmas. If you have items that you'd like to bring to forum, please see either myself or Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Counselor. And if you have resolutions that you'd like to discuss, we do ask that you bring copies of those to the council forums. And also to remember that council forums are an informal session to discuss issues that are coming before council. No voting or decisions are made at council forums.
Thank you. I declare the ALA-APA information session and council meeting adjourned. Don't forget to sign your ballots and pass them to the aisle.